Therapy Notes is the highest rated EHR, practice management, and billing software for mental health professionals. Its all-in-one platform is designed to streamline all aspects of your practice, from connecting with clients via secure messages to scheduling, notes, billing, and more. You can trust Therapy Notes has you covered. And one of the best parts? 24/7 customer service with a live person. It's beyond easy to get help over the phone or by email at any time of day from their knowledgeable and friendly representatives. The best time to give Therapy Notes a try is now. Sign up for your free trial by going to therapynotes.com, clicking Start My Free Trial, and accessing your first 2 months free with the promo code CHAT. See why Therapy Notes is the most trusted EHR for behavioral health professionals today. Therapy Chat Podcast, episode 481.
This is the Therapy Chat Podcast with Laura Reagan, LCSWC. The information shared in this podcast is not a substitute for seeking help from a licensed mental health professional. And now, here's your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC.
Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan, and this week I'm bringing you a replay of an episode from back in 2017, 8 years ago, when I talked with David Emerson, who created trauma-centered, trauma-sensitive yoga. In our conversation, you will hear us talking about the research related to the benefits of trauma of yoga for healing trauma, as well as how therapists can implement trauma-sensitive yoga into their practices. His book, Trauma-Sensitive Yoga in Therapy, Bringing the Body into Treatment, outlines why and how therapists can bring yoga into therapy practice and teaches the asanas and the when you would use them and why. So it's a wonderful resource. And David Emerson's other book, Overcoming Trauma Through Yoga, Reclaiming Your Body, written with Elizabeth Hopper, PhD, is a wonderful book for anyone. You don't have to be a therapist to learn a lot about yourself and your trauma through this book. I've recommended that book to many clients who may not understand, why would I even want to go into connecting the body? What do I need that for? I found that the book, in my opinion, it really explains that in a beautiful and clear, understandable way. Next week, we will have a new interview with Dr. Hillary McBride. And after that, we'll hear a new interview with Dr. Stephen Porges and Karen Ondarko about their new book, Safe and Sound. So excited about what's ahead. I've got an upcoming interview with Paula Scataloni as well about Safe and Sound Protocol. So lots of interesting and exciting things are ahead. Be sure to check the show notes because I've got some new discounts and offers for therapists and a link to the new For Therapists page on Trauma Therapist Network, where you, if you're a trauma therapist, you can sign up for the Trauma Therapist Network email listserv, which is not full membership to Trauma Therapist Network, but at a one-time fee, you can join the email listserv. And hopefully that will be another beautiful place for us to connect. We already have more than 80 people who have expressed interest in that. And it's about half and half current TTN members and non-members. So would love to have you join us there if you're a trauma therapist who wants to communicate using an email listserv. As always, thank you for listening. Hello, welcome back to Therapy Chat. Today, I'm super excited to have a guest with me, David Emerson, who is the director of the trauma-sensitive yoga program at the Justice Center at JRI, the Trauma Center at JRI. David, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Hi, Laura. Thanks.
So can we start off by you just talking a little bit about yourself and your work?
Sure. Let's see. I come at this as a yoga teacher, but I was a social worker for my first work out of college. My first job's for about 10 years. And in those roles, I did kind of milieu work. And to me, I think of it as sort of frontline social work in a sense, with mostly with youth, kids getting into trouble in their home communities, in their cities, more or less. And the kinds of things I did were Outward Bound type stuff, Project Adventure, mm-hmm. you may be familiar with, which really what it was making space for these young kids who were getting into trouble to get out of their environment and into something new. And this was the woods, climbing trees, rowing boats, breaking up fights, climbing more trees. And it was just a remarkably successful intervention, if you like. But I never heard the words trauma. This was 25 years ago or so. Never heard the word trauma really, but now looking back, knowing that that's what we were working with, kids with pretty complex trauma. Yeah. But it was the physicality of it that was so successful, for me, I felt like I wanted to take it to the next step, which meant going to school to become a clinician. And so I went to the Smith School for Social Work for 1 year and ended up dropping out. It just wasn't for me. The psychodynamic psychotherapy, trying to put words to these sorts of experiences and feeling like that was my job, to try to help people find language for things and see if I could come up with some good language. I never got comfortable with it. And I could see people who were really good at it. And I work with clinicians very closely and I have great respect for good clinicians. It's just, it wasn't comfortable for me. So I just went down the road of Tai Chi and yoga practices, which were really satisfying for me personally, and found a way to kind of bring it all together through a connection with Bessel van der Kolk and the Trauma Center.
That's awesome. And, Bessel van der Kolk is the person who I really became convinced about the effects of yoga therapy on trauma survivors when I heard him speaking about it at the Psychotherapy Networker in 2015. He said basically in 10 years, no one will be doing talk therapy. It's all going to be yoga therapy. And I was like, wow. That's a really big statement to make. And of course, he was just sort of generalizing. But when I came across your book, I was like, oh yeah, this is someone I definitely want to talk to, because, if you and Bessel van der Kolk are working together, then you're doing exactly what he was specifically referring to.
Yeah. I mean, the project was, from my perspective as a yoga teacher, I didn't want to kind of go it alone. And the yoga world really doesn't have any rules. Mm-hmm. So it's very possible for yoga teachers to make claims that have no basis, no empirical basis at all. And I felt like I knew enough about clinical sort of boundaries and the professionalism that comes with licensure from that perspective, that and also the seriousness of trauma, that yeah. I definitely didn't want to go alone. And I just happened to be lucky enough to live close to the trauma center. And so I sought out Bessel, and it was fortuitous. He was starting his own yoga practice and was interested in this from his point of view. So it really worked out well. But it was about, for me, from my side, having real oversight from clinical people who would be able to say, this isn't working. This isn't working and we don't want to do this. It's basically, some skepticism.
Yeah, because you don't want to do any harm unintentionally.
Exactly. Yeah. This is too serious to kind of play around with.
Exactly. So can you tell the audience, what is trauma sensitive yoga?
It's language that we coined, but it's also language that a lot of other people are using besides us now. So you'll find people saying they do trauma sensitive yoga, and it may be very different from our model. Mm. So to distinguish it, we call our model Trauma Center Trauma Sensitive Yoga, TCTSY. And so I'll speak about that model for your listeners. And in that case, what TCTSY is a yoga-based intervention for complex trauma. And so underneath what we do with yoga is a real significant focus on trauma theory. So we're very much grounded in trauma theory, and then using yoga forms to address what we feel are some of the key elements of the suffering that's related to complex trauma.
Yeah. So can you talk about what the theoretical underpinnings are in a little bit more detail?
Yeah. I mean, so on paper, there are three. There's trauma theory, attachment theory, and neuroscience. But the way we feel, you know, in terms of trauma theory, how it's evolved since 1980, you really can't speak about complex trauma without talking about attachment and relational dynamics and neuroscience at this point. So MRI and fMRIs have really had an impact on how we understand trauma as well. So I would say the two key pieces underneath what we do come from Judith Herman and then from Bessel van der Kolk. And from Judith Herman is really an understanding of power dynamics and interrelational power dynamics. And so she says that no intervention that takes power away from the survivor can possibly foster her recovery, no matter how much it appears to be in her immediate best interest. And so thinking about building an intervention like this, having to be fully devoted to not manipulating power in the context of the whatever the treatment is. So we really pay attention to that. For us, the question is, how do we communicate that we want to share power and not be manipulative or coercive? And then from Bessel, from that side, is a statement that he makes a lot, which is the goal of treatment for trauma is to help people live in the present. And I think on the surface, that can sound almost kind of like new agey in a certain way, like just be present. Mm-hmm. But he's a neuroscientist, so the present moment experience is connected to neurophysiology, and particularly something called interoception, which I'm sure we'll get to talk about.
Yeah.
But we're really attending to an actual practice of what does it mean to be present that we have filtered through van der Kolk's work over the past couple decades.
So can you talk a little bit more about that practice of being present and how it's related to neuroscience?
Yeah, it's actually a very practical thing. There have been some researchers, neurologists, neuroscientists over the past couple of decades that have identified parts of the brain that connect our visceral experience, our felt experience in our body to our awareness. These regions, these brain regions, are referred to as interoceptive regions or interoceptive pathways. And they're really like, I think of them as a non-neuroscientist, I think of them as train stations that carry the information from our body to our awareness. So it's feeling everything from our heartbeat to muscles contracting and extending, pressure, hunger is an interoceptive dynamic. From neuroscience, we get a picture of these regions in the brain that relay this information. And then we have trauma specialists, people like Ruth Lanius and Bessel van der Kolk, whose work indicates that these parts of the brain are underactive for people who've experienced chronic complex trauma. So if you put that together with the clinical evidence that's evolved over the past 20 years, it has a lot to do with patients' experience in their bodies. Some of the language that clinicians use, even before there was neuroscience, was difficulty localizing skin contact, difficulty being touched, difficulty explaining internal states. These were recognized symptoms of complex trauma even before there was any sense of neuroscientific evidence. You put that all together for us, and we think, wow, maybe a lot of the suffering for our patients is a very inconsistent experience with their body. You know, either they're feeling nothing at all, sensorially, nothing at all, or overwhelmed with sensation, and they can't really place exactly where it's coming from. Maybe a lot of these symptoms we see in our patients, self-harm, self-medication, chronic sort of involvement in relationships that seem dangerous from the outset, maybe there's something about them where people are trying to manage having their body and unreliable, you know, their experience with their body is unreliable. And these may be ways to manage that lack of reliability. So the question for us was like, can we practice feeling our body, use yoga forms for that? And will that have an impact on these interoceptive regions of the brain? And then potentially some of the suffering that's related to trauma.
Yeah. So I still want to ask you about the other two theoretical pieces, but can you talk, since this seems to be a natural point to bring it up, about your study that you guys at JRI did?
Yeah, the study funded by the National Institute of Health. So when you get a grant like that from, you know, taxpayers, we have to study PTSD symptomatology because it's the only medical diagnosis we have for trauma. Yeah. So we looked at PTSD symptoms, but our subjects in the cohorts were women who experienced chronic childhood physical and sexual abuse. So we were looking at complex trauma, interrelational trauma, but everybody had to qualify for PTSD.
Right. And we know there are many trauma survivors who have immense amounts of traumatic history that don't necessarily fit the criteria for PTSD.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So we really, you know, we wanted to study our patients at the trauma center who really, for the most part, are people with complex trauma. Mm-hmm. And like you said, not everybody has PTSD, but we did need to look at those symptoms in order to satisfy the grant kind of parameters.
Sure.
So the study itself, what was published in the psychiatric journal, was looking at PTSD symptomatology. We also did a very small cohort where we did brain scans. And very small, just to kind of sample our hypothesis, which was that we can activate or bring more activity to interoceptive regions through this approach to yoga. And this the picture that we took is in Bessel's book, The Body Keeps the Score.
Okay.
And it did indicate that it looks like we may be able to create more activity in some key interoceptive regions.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's exciting. I mean, and I'm glad you want to talk about the other theoretical underpinnings, because this isn't the way we're talking about it now, it sounds like TCTSY is kind of mechanical, mm-hmm. in a certain way, and there's stuff that's more important.
Yeah.
but we really are interested in this neuroscience, and we feel like it is a very important piece.
Yeah, one of the great things about the advances in neuroscience is it backs up what people who do trauma work and who have developed these, you know, non-CBT approaches to treating trauma have understood for a long time. So it's just sort of a matter of proving to people where, you know, you want to say, see, here's evidence that this does make a difference, other than just, you know, the anecdotal evidence that trauma survivors and clinicians have been seeing for years.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. If we can kind of approach it that way and not get too captivated by, you know, the fancy machines.
Yeah.
Then I think we can, it's good. It'll be useful, but that's the danger. You know, we want to remember what trauma is fundamentally, from our perspective, is a relational thing. It's about relationships.
Yes.
So we need to really, in our work, have to stay focused on that and not get lost.
I agree.
In technology. Yeah.
Yeah. So please go ahead and talk about the other two pieces. And I think that's going to be really captivating for the audience to hear about too.
Well, from the perspective of attachment theory, which is really the study of relationships, it started off to be the study of primary relationships, the mother-infant dyad, but has expanded to be, for example, in art, what has impact on us is something like the therapeutic alliance. Mm-hmm. And the sort of work that's come out of that research has been the most important dynamics for success in therapy is when the patient or the client describes their therapist as warm and empathetic. And so we can see relationships kind of front and center. It's not the technique so much as describing your therapist as warm and empathetic where you see the correlation to the best results. From trauma theory, for me, it's Judith Herman and her articulation of interrelational power dynamics. I think she's done the best job, at least for me, in terms of articulating what trauma is, which is about power. So,
yeah,
you know, she uses the word captivity to talk about her patients, adult women captive in abusive relationships. And so we can kind of see like what's happening for our patients is a chronic exposure to lack of power and all the complexity that's involved in negotiating relationships where you have less power for whatever reason, a whole range of reasons, and that the person with more power is either manipulating their power or incapable of sharing it for a whole variety of complicated reasons. And what happens to people when that's their primary relational experience? And so when it comes to like yoga, for example, just for our piece, yoga can be a situation that reinforces a lack of power. A lot of yoga teachers get used to telling people what to do. You know, put your leg here, raise your arms, take a deep breath. Kind of seems benign, you know, well, it's just where to put your foot and your arm, just when to breathe. But in the context of trauma, it's Judith Herman saying anything that takes power away from somebody can't possibly foster recovery. So our relationships in the yoga, in our yoga practice, are about sharing power. And we can talk about how we do that, but it's, to me, I think to us in the program, it's the most important thing is that we're never going to tell anybody what to do or what to feel.
Yeah. That is, you know, empowerment isn't even about giving the client the power. It's knowing that they are the one who is in control of themselves and their bodies throughout the process. And, you know, that may be an entirely new experience for someone who is chronically abused throughout childhood.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's an interesting and challenging piece, which is a yoga teacher or a therapist, for example, needs to recognize that they inherently have power in the relationship. You know, they're the one behind the desk, you know, with their degrees on the wall, or if it's a yoga teacher, their mat is positioned a little bit differently. They're talking most of the time. They actually have power in the relationship. I feel like what we've learned at the trauma center is we have to acknowledge that. Mm-hmm. Then, because if we were to pretend that that wasn't true, that would also be manipulative in a way that would ultimately be taking power away, because everybody else recognizes that we have power.
Yeah. You
know
what I
mean? Like our students know. We just have to acknowledge it. And then it's like, what do we do next? What do we do next? And so for a yoga teacher, it's, you know, we get to start using words. For example, that's one way to do it. And the words we use are always invitational. And by using invitational language consistently, we can start to communicate with people that we're interested in sharing power. You know, that we're not here to tell you what to do. We're actually here to have a shared experience, you know, where nobody's coerced, nobody's manipulated.
Yeah. Something that is in your book that really resonated with me is that in trauma center, trauma sensitive yoga, the clinician does the yoga forms with the client.
Yeah. So there's a framework that we call shared authentic experience. And I would say even more important than language is the fact that the facilitator is willing to engage in the process. And the challenge, I think, for the facilitator is to acknowledge, you know, that someone is coming to you for help. They're paying you. There's a power differential that's inherent. But when we do the work, we are sharing power as fully as possible. And so the shared authentic experience is a way to really, you know, I'm sort of walking around language here. We don't want to be manipulative in any way. We're not trying to pretend or fake people into thinking we're sharing power. this work is most successful when we're really actually engaged in doing the same thing together, but being responsible for ourselves. So just take a yoga form, for example, okay? Some yoga classes, the yoga teacher is giving instructions about a form, telling people what to do and not doing it. Maybe walking around the room, maybe doing something else. In the case of TCTSY, we're facilitating an experience and also having our own experience. And that experience needs to be very totally authentic. When we invite somebody to try something, we're inviting ourselves. When we invite someone to notice what it feels like in their body, we're also inviting ourselves. And I think I don't really have evidence for this other than the evidence we have in general for the program, but the more we can have a shared authentic experience, the more successful this is, because trauma calls for authenticity. You know, trauma doesn't respond well to fancy techniques or manipulation, at least for our clients.
Well, no, and manipulation is often re-traumatizing for especially people who've experienced childhood abuse, whether, you know, emotional, physical, sexual, you know, that's an inherent piece of it. So I can see that that's completely I don't know what word I'm looking for, but it's completely the opposite of the goal of what you're talking about and trauma work in general.
Yeah, it's a little bit scary because and I'm just speaking for myself as a yoga teacher, as an adjunctive care provider here, but I think it applies to anyone who's going to bring some TCTSY in, including therapists and psychiatrists. We have to acknowledge that we really can't control outcomes for people. Mm-hmm. And if we get into the business of trying to control outcomes and make people, you know, calm down or make people have plans for the future, then we start to manipulate people. And manipulation, like you said, is at the core of trauma in the first place. And if we do that, it speaks to the traumatized part, you know, instead of the part that isn't, that it has power and can cultivate power, which is, in our case, is just about making choices. I'm just keeping it very present. What do I want to do with this form? How far do I want to twist? How far do I want to lift my leg? But we're turning that attention inward to figure out what we want for our body, not what someone else might want from the outside.
Which could be a completely new experience.
Yeah, I think it could be. And I think that's probably where, I mean, I should say we partner with clinicians. We present this as an adjunctive treatment to treatment as usual, because there's an art form to not overwhelming people with too many choices or too much interoception. You know, we want to try to find the dosage for each person that's useful. There's some clinical quality to that, I would say. Mm-hmm. We can be wrong. I mean, we could make an assessment like this person can manage X number of choices and this level of complexity around interoceptive sensation. And we might be wrong. And that's where the relationship comes in. You know, we can be wrong and someone can tell us we're wrong. And then we can try to adjust.
Once attempts started rising, I realized it was time for a new bedspread. So I gave my old bedspread an upgrade with Quince. You might be familiar with clothing options available at Quince, but did you know they also have home items, including furniture, wall art, and much more? The best part? Everything with Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than what you'd find at similar brands. Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I'm a pretty sensory sensitive person. I found a 100% organic hot bedspread that complements my bedroom design beautifully, and the weight and texture of the fabric is just right. I want to feel the weight of a blanket on me at night in the summer, but I don't want to be hot. Treat your home to a little summer glow up with Quince. Go to quince.com/chat for free shipping on your order and 365-day return. That's quince.com/chat to get free shipping and 365-day return. return. Quince.com/ Today's episode is sponsored by Psychotherapy Networker and PESI. If you're a therapist, be sure to check out the partner page, which is linked in the show notes, where you can get discounted trainings with previous Therapy Chat guests like Courtney Armstrong, Dr. Leslie Korn, Dr. Ariel Schwartz, Dr. Tammy Nelson, Dr. Janina Fisher, Rebecca Case, Dr. Peter Levine, Dr. Lindsay Gibson, Deb Dana, Lori Gottlieb, and many, many others. You'll find the link in the show notes to my partner page with PESI and Psychotherapy Networker, where you can find all these discounted training. If you need CEs, this is a great place to go. Have you ever had those days where everything just feels harder than usual? I've definitely had my fair share, and I totally get how frustrating it can be. Sometimes it's not just stress or lack of sleep. It could be hormones at play. That's where Happy Mammoth comes in. They offer a free 2-minute quiz that can help you uncover the root cause of your hormonal symptoms. It's super easy. Just answer a few questions about what you're going through and where you're at in life. After taking the quiz, you'll get a personalized recommendation to help balance your hormones and start feeling better. Hormone Harmony is an herbal formula that fine-tunes the hormonal system. We often think we need big lifestyle changes to feel better, but in reality, small habits like taking Hormone Harmony every day can have a huge impact on how we feel. Head over to happymammoth.com and take their free 2-minute hormone quiz today to find the ultimate answer to your stubborn hormonal issues. And for a limited time, you can also get 15% off your entire first order with my code CHAT at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code CHAT for 15% off today. Therapy Notes is consistently transforming the way therapists manage their practices with continuous updates designed to save money and improve efficiency. Their latest game changer, Therapy Fuel, a powerful and fully integrated suite of AI tools that streamline documentation so you can focus more on your clients. With AI features that help by generating progress notes from summaries or transcriptions, creating contact notes directly from clients' secure messages, and automated summaries of client history forms, Therapy Notes users are already reporting hours of saved time and energy. Some other recent feature improvements include automated recurring client payments, electronic secondary insurance billing, and their constantly expanding library of outcome measures. The best time to give Therapy Notes a try is now. Sign up for your free trial by going to therapynotes.com, clicking Start My Free Trial, and accessing your first 2 months free with the promo code CHAT. See why Therapy Notes is the most trusted EHR for behavioral health professionals today. Right. And what you said about the shared authentic experience and attachment theory, how it's relational, that all goes together because it's the trust in that therapeutic alliance that allows the client to be willing to try something new, and the therapist trusting him or herself also to try something new with that client, not knowing if it's going to be effective or if it's going to, how it's going to turn out, you know. That's pretty vulnerable. And we do kind of want all of us who become therapists, you know, we usually go into it because we want to be the one who knows how to help the other person. So a lot of us have a pretty strong sense of discomfort with not knowing.
Yeah. True. And it makes sense. I mean, so one of the questions that I would put out there for all of us is, can we be more, this is a little bit of a paradox, but the suggestion maybe that we might be more effective if we are less attached to outcomes. If we really want to help people, maybe we need to back away from trying to control what happens a little bit.
Yeah. You're onto something there. I mean, you know, if you can tell yourself that, I mean, we're all about outcomes measures, but if you can tell yourself that this is a method that is known to produce positive outcomes for clients, so why not just let the process happen and then at some point go back and say, was there change? You know, instead of trying to force a certain type of change to happen.
I know. It's really kind of weird because we have this study that was funded by NIH and published in a peer-reviewed psychiatric journal, which is really important, but which, you know, it appears to be all focused on outcomes, but the technique, if you like, the practice itself is to not be focused on outcomes, to be, like, as Vanderkolk says, be focused on being present, to really practice just what's happening now. And it's a cool paradox, but it's one that we have to kind of get our heads around a little bit.
Yeah, it is a shift, and I think it's a positive one. I'm so excited about the direction that trauma therapy is going. And again, just so excited about the work you're doing and so glad that you can talk to us about it. So can you talk a little bit about why TCTSY is a good option for people who have complex trauma in particular?
I guess I would think of it as an option, and then people is an option we want to make available, and then people can just sort of decide for themselves, I suppose. But the idea would be that trauma, as we understand it, and the therapists and clinical people have been out in front on this for decades. People have been trying to treat PTSD since 1980, have been trying to treat trauma as PTSD since 1980. And so clinicians have learned that that doesn't work for all of their people with complex trauma. So they've been out in front and trying to figure out what to do. Somatic practices like sensory motor psychotherapy or somatic experiencing, Hakomi method, others have been moving into the space suggesting we need to engage the body in some way. If we want to treat people, we can't just speak to the frontal lobe. We need to do something with the body. So in that way, TCTSY is right in line with those somatic practices. For me, I think what I enjoy the most, I think anybody who does this kind of work enjoys the most, is that we don't, in order for it to be successful, we don't have to, we don't focus on outcomes. So much of treatment, whether it's hospitalization and medications or any kind of cognitive behavioral techniques are focused on outcomes, trying to get something at the end. And for our patients, that focus, I think when I try to listen to people from my perspective, that focus has made people feel like folks don't understand what it's like to live in a traumatized body. You know, that it's not about forms and numbers. It's about skin and bones and muscles, and, you know, my body. So I feel like TCTSY meets people a little bit closer to where trauma really is, you know, which is ultimately nonverbal. It's ultimately very visceral, very deep, and not something that maybe, okay, or at least our study suggests that maybe it's not something that everybody has to explain. Some people may really benefit from having a narrative piece to their trauma treatment, but it may be that if we focus on that as kind of the sole outcome, we might be missing some of what, or maybe even the heart of what trauma is, which is very physical. So I think TCTSY kind of honors that. And in particular with our model, we don't even attach it to trauma. So for example, if somebody's having an experience in their body, let's say some pain or sensation in their neck or shoulders, for us, that is about what's happening right now and not about like that might be attached to some traumatic experience in the past. So we don't even focus on it in that way. Oh, let's figure out what's happening in your shoulders because it's connected to trauma. From our perspective, it's just let's practice noticing what that feels like in your shoulders, whatever that is. And then what do you want to do next? Do you want to stay with that? Do you want to change that? Do you want to experiment with a different form? So it's, to me, the satisfaction of it is in, to be honest, is in not dwelling on trauma, actually. We have to be really deeply trauma informed, I think, to be successful facilitators. But the practice itself is to not be dwelling on trauma and the ideas of trauma. You know, it's like, what's happening in my body right now? What do I want to do next? And then it's over.
Mm. Yeah. So that is present focused.
Yeah. And I have a luxury, you know, as in my role as a non-clinician, I don't tend to know people's trauma story or history. I might know some general things, but I don't need to know details. So in a way, like my role being there, I don't have to get to dwell on that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And, you know, the story isn't necessarily the important part. Some people do really strongly want to tell their story and they want it to be witnessed. And there's a lot to that.
Yeah.
But that's not the be all end all for everyone.
Yeah. Right. And exactly. And so I would never want to take that away from anybody. I would never suggest that it's not, there's no value in telling you the story. What we hear from people in our program, since everybody's in therapy, is going to the yoga class or the yoga session, knowing that we don't have to talk about trauma, but that the facilitator understands trauma, you know, has an understanding of what's happening. That's where people find some value, you know, and then in the actual practice, shared authentic experience, interoception, choice making. But we do hear from people that, you know, knowing I don't have to talk about trauma, but that the person is trauma informed adds a level of comfort that seems to be really useful. So another, like some people will come to yoga classes and then go to their therapy session right after. And so they have a place to talk about trauma if that's useful. And then they have a place to work with trauma in a nonverbal way.
Yeah. And what I love about working in the body to address trauma is that, you know, rather than in talking, is that so much of it is nonverbal and visceral, as you said, and people can feel, you know, it can be kind of reinforcing shame that they can't access the words.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not doing this right because I don't know how to describe it. I don't know what it is.
Right. Right. Exactly. Yeah. And shame is a constant companion, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's trauma. It's always there, you know, and then it's always there in the yoga session. You're never going to be good enough. You can't do this. It's always there and it's deep. And then the facilitator needs to, I think, acknowledge that companion in a way, and then also not speak to it as best we can by, you know, asking people to evaluate their experience or connect it to their past, or even to use their experience with the yoga form to think about the future. Like for me, one of the challenges is if somebody says, hey, this feels really good, or it's the first time I felt calm in a while, then the yoga team, then my job is not to say, hey, the next time you feel upset, why don't you do this? Because that's a planning for the future. And that's really not what we do. We're focused on being present. So if somebody says this feels great, that's part of what's happening. You know, if somebody feels this is uncomfortable, that's part of what's happening. We just kind of move with it, you know, with what actually is happening, instead of using that information to assess the past or a plan for the future.
Yeah.
And I think that may have something to do with your thoughts around shame, which is if we try to use our body experience as it is now to make sense of the past or to plan for the future, that may be where it gets a little bit, you know, where the shame piece can get a little bit more power. Mm. I mean, according to Vander Kolk, it really is about what's happening right now. So maybe we're actually trying to put something onto the experience that isn't there or isn't as important. In other words, like when I feel pain in my body or strain or something good in a yoga form, that's really what it is. It's not about how that reminds me of the past or helps me plan for the future.
Right. It's about embodying your body.
Yeah. In a way that, I mean, the way we're talking about it now, there is no real room for judgment. You know, it's just what's happening. And I do think that's something that the yoga world can offer. You know, the yoga world at its best really is supposed to be non-judgmental experience. And I think that non-judgment comes from being present and not thinking about the past or the future.
Yeah, like everything else, the westernized version makes it, you know, for many of us, a competition, and how flexible someone is and how well they can stretch, and, you know, what we're wearing and how dedicated to our practice we are and if we're breathing correctly. But that's not really what it's about.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. If I only do this form the right way, then I'm going to be spiritually enlightened.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of undercurrent, you know, in typical yoga classes, and that's basically what it is. If I can just do the form right, get the right alignment, then I will have no more suffering and I'll be an enlightened person. And I think the yoga apparatus encourages that kind of thinking. And it's probably driven by, you know, money.
Mm-hmm.
But underneath, yoga offers this thing called non-attachment to outcomes. And non-attachment to outcomes just means what Vernikolk is saying, which is the goal of treatment of trauma is to be present. It's not to plan for the future.
So can I read a couple sentences from your book, Trauma-Sensitive Yoga and Therapy?
Yeah, sure.
There's a part that really, really resonated with me when I was reading it. And it says, it's talking about a study, and it says, this and other research are pointing to the fact that trauma survivors are deeply disconnected from their core being, the feeling of being embodied. And this seems to be a great source of the suffering associated with complex trauma and PTSD. In essence, this research on the brain suggests that traumatized people do not have a reliable self, a feelable self, a foundation from which to safely experience themselves, relationships, and the world around them. So, and skipping a sentence after that, it says, I would suggest that living with an unfeelable and unpredictable body is one valid way to explain what complex trauma is. I just think that's really powerful, because the experience of having complex trauma is, it's not a set of symptoms that's in the DSM-5 or any version of the DSM so far. Even though, you know, we try to capture through some of the different concepts like complex trauma, chronic PTSD, or complex PTSD, developmental trauma disorder, that experience is something that is extremely hard to put into words. And that when people haven't felt what it's like to be embodied, they don't even know what it is to explain what's not there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. No, I know. And it does point to the fact that having, you know, are we ever going to get the perfect diagnosis into the DSM? You know, what we're talking about are unwordable things, you know, mm-hmm. they really are, but they're knowable things. And then, like, where is the knowing? Well, it's in our bodies. What if there can be people involved in treatment who understand or are willing to try to understand? I feel like I've learned most of what I know definitely from our students, and I'm still trying to understand, but I feel like I have an inkling. And, you know, part of that knowing is that, you know, there's no language ultimately for this. It's a body thing. And then we can draw on people like Antonio Damasio, who's I'm thinking of when you're reading those sentences, a neurologist who's not a trauma person, who talks about the fact that we, our core self is our sentient self, our mm-hmm. felt self. You get a neuroscientist like Alan Craig, who titles his paper, The Sentient Self, and he's writing about interoception. And the mechanism of interoception is we know we exist because we feel our bodies. And feeling your body is ultimately a wordless thing. So the challenge, I think, is to kind of gather this information, introduce it into the world of therapy, which is, you know, the treatment as usual is psychodynamic psychotherapy, which relies on language, and, you know, psychoanalysis rely on language, and see if we can kind of bring these two things together. You know, the treatment domain the therapy offers, and then some of this understanding of what it means to be an embodied being that comes from places like neuroscience.
It seems very complex to consider those ideas, those concepts. You know, it's the way that we don't usually think about our bodies, our lives, our feelings. But, you know, I have so many clients who, because I work primarily with people who have complex trauma, you know, they'll describe, there's just something wrong with me. There's something missing, or there's, you know, something's just not right with me. Some of the pieces aren't there. And, you know, I think that's what they're talking about.
Yeah.
That disconnection from the sentient self.
Somebody in our study, there's a paper called Claiming, the title includes Claiming Peaceful Embodiment by Allison Rhodes. And she did interviews with people in our study. And it's a really beautiful paper that people can find if you Google Allison Rhodes, Claiming Peaceful Embodiment. One of the things that someone said that's kind of stuck with me is she said, it was a long time for me to consider myself not an outline, not an outline. So just kind of picture the visual of like a pencil outline of a body, because she was talking about her embodied self. And then she said, you know, this yoga practice, stuff we're talking about, helped her to fill in the details, to define herself was the language she used. So I think, I just feel like there's a lot there, you know, about feeling like an outline that sounds a lot like trauma to me, mm-hmm. you know, and treatment to me sounds a lot like filling in the details. It doesn't mean that we're not going to suffer and we're not going to be imperfect and, you know, we're not going to feel inadequate like or anything like that. It just means that we have, you know, we have details that are filled in about, you know, and it's very physical. It's very much an embodied kind of experience. And then we can move through the world, you know, fuller sense of self, experience of self.
Yeah, it's very powerful. I'm really in awe. So in your book, you say that clinicians can use your method, whether even if we're not yoga teachers, how much training do people need to have before they can try to practice some of these things with clients?
Well, to me, clinicians, but just by virtue of the structure kind of around them, the licensure structure around them, can incorporate any material that would be considered best practices. And we feel like we're in that ballpark now with the research we've done, and then other people have used our model, and with some feasibility studies, other people have just gotten some larger grants to use our model. So we're gathering this data that suggests that this could be considered a best practice or is in that realm now.
Right.
So, you know, therapists should be able to use it, and it's going to be about what's comfortable for each person. I think the book is a way to have some, you know, pictures of forms, some language around some of the forms. They're all seated, so they can be done in the office. And one or two forms would suffice, you know, for the purpose here, which is, you know, using a yoga form to practice being in charge of your body, making choices, and experimenting, investigating interoceptive possibilities, shared authentic experience. You need one yoga form for that. So one thing therapists might do is just start to try it, practice it themselves, you know, maybe with colleagues or friends, family, try a couple of forms and you find one or two that feel comfortable, share them with your clients if they're interested.
So it's very accessible in that way. It's not like you need a lot of space. You can do it seated, or clients can do it seated as well. And you don't have to be a yoga teacher. You know, it's just you need to understand it, practice it yourself, have the right, you know, stance that you're bringing into the work.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because we've built this in a clinical setting, the trauma center, we feel like it's accessible for clinicians, you know, when they feel comfortable. I mean, you know, you wouldn't want to teach a yoga class because that would be sort of outside of your scope of practice unless you're a yoga teacher. But a therapist in the office bringing in a couple of yoga forms is totally reasonable when it's comfortable.
And then you do offer more in-depth trainings as well in this method. Am I right?
Yeah, we do trainings all over the place, open to therapists and yoga teachers.
That's wonderful. David, is there anything else you would like to tell us about your book before we finish up for today?
I think we pretty much hit like some of the key elements.
Awesome. Well, I think your book is great. It just explains so clearly what this is all about and how clinicians can use it. There's all the research to back everything up that, you know, lets us know it's legit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To the point, you know, to the degree that we know, we have, there's a perspective there. And the other thing that I like about science, the way that, you know, we practice it as people, is you can always, there's always a possibility that we're wrong and someone can prove that. You know what I mean?
There you go.
I feel like we have a coherent story. And, but yeah, so it should be open for scrutiny too.
So can you share your website so that people can get more information about all of this?
Sure. It's traumasensitiveyoga.com. And we have all of our yoga material there. There's traumacenter.org, which is more general as well, but either one.
Wonderful. Well, David Emerson, thank you so much for being on Therapy Chat today.
Thanks, Laura. Enjoyed it.
Therapy Notes is the highest rated EHR, practice management, and billing software for mental health professionals. Its all-in-one platform is designed to streamline all aspects of your practice, from connecting with clients via secure messages to scheduling, notes, billing, and more. You can trust Therapy Notes has you covered. And one of the best parts? 24/7 customer service with a live person. It's beyond easy to get help over the phone or by email at any time of day from their knowledgeable and friendly representatives. The best time to give Therapy Notes a try is now. Sign up for your free trial by going to therapynotes.com, clicking Start My Free Trial, and accessing your first 2 months free with the promo code CHAT. See why Therapy Notes is the most trusted EHR for behavioral health professionals today.
Thank you for listening to Therapy Chat with your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC. For more information, please visit therapychatpodcast.com.